This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, December 16th of 2021. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a CU Boulder meteorologist will give us a scientific breakdown of the converging factors behind yesterday's windstorm. This time on the Cannabis Report, cannabis correspondent Leland Rucker reflects on 2021 marijuana news in Colorado and around the country. And John Lindorf joins us in the studio to catch us up on local food news. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines, and then Sam Fuqua will be in to host his quarterly conflict resolution call-in show. Today's topic will be family conflicts and the holidays. Then at 9:30, Brian Easter will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, so stay tuned to your community radio station. But first, we'll start with headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Wind gusts between 80 and 100 miles per hour ripped through Colorado's Front Range yesterday. By late afternoon, some 60,000 people were without electricity. Winter Storm Bankston started in California, dumping snow in the Sierras and Utah. Much-needed precipitation arrived in Colorado, but the wind wreaked havoc. Hundreds of flights at Denver International Airport were delayed, and over 100 were canceled. Only 2 of 6 runways were in operation, the Denver Post reported. Dozens of COVID testing and vaccine sites across the state were also shut down. Images of downed trees, dust-filled skies, and overturned trucks filled social media posts. The storm moved on to a number of Midwestern states and is expected to continue eastward today. The Senate has shelved the Build Back Better Act until after the holiday recess, thereby freezing monthly disbursements to families made through the federal Child Tax Credit Program. Partly responsible for the standoff in Congress is Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, a conservative Democrat who says he opposes the overall costs of the Build Back Better plan. Parent leaders and experts in Colorado held a press conference yesterday to voice concerns over what suspension of the monthly child tax credit payments would mean for families here. Lorena Garcia is the executive director of the Colorado Statewide Parent Coalition.
Another holiday season without with housing costs going through the roof, a pandemic, and the one small piece of relief, the child care tax credit, being threatened to be taken away, that's just too much. Allowing individual senators to delay the vote will only thrust millions of families back into poverty, leaving Colorado families as well as across the country in peril.
The expanded child tax credit was approved earlier this year when President Biden signed the American Rescue Plan into law. While payments are being sent out for December, there's no guarantee that they will continue in the new year. Conservation groups have swayed a commission to revisit protections for urban waterways. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Colorado's Water Quality Control Commission agreed this week to revisit demands to increase protections for the South Platte River and Clear Creek. The commission's reversal came in response to a petition by a coalition of environmental activists. They approached Colorado Governor Jared Polis and accused the commission of putting industry profits first rather than the health and safety of city residents historically affected by pollution. According to the Colorado Sun, a 2020 decision by the commission had ruled that greater protection of the waterways should address not urban streams, but, quote, pristine mountain waters. This comment outraged local government and environmental watchdog groups such as the Colorado Green Latinos. The change of heart brought on by a petition was reportedly a first in the commission's history. Justice and also cultural concerns are similarly coming into play for XL Energy's plan to add more needed new transmission lines across portions of Colorado. Many advocacy groups want the transmission lines in order to link together clean energy farms and provide reliable energy, but the planned routes may also interfere with valuable cultural sites in other environmentally sensitive areas. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Weld County commissioners announced yesterday that they would continue to post information about COVID on social media. The statement reversed a decision made in November to stop approving Facebook posts about vaccinations. This after three residents complained that the information was dangerous, citing a debunked claim that it caused heart attacks in children. County spokesperson Jennifer Finch said in the statement that the entire board had not supported the decision to hold back information. She added that discussions internally led to a consensus that sharing information with the public would allow citizens to make their own decisions about COVID vaccinations. Conservationists from Arizona, Nevada, and California signed off yesterday on voluntary usage reductions of water from the Colorado River. The decision was made to help prevent mandatory cuts in the near future. Severe drought, worsened by climate change, has decreased the natural water supply. Current guidelines for managing the river expire in 2026. The Colorado River Water Users Association used their annual meeting in Las Vegas to get ahead of that deadline. The three lower basin states pledged to invest about $100,000 in the two-year project. Federal funds will provide an extra $100 million. Funding would go towards water savings programs. Indian tribal leaders, who hold rights to about 20% of the water, also signed related agreements. The LA Times reports that another environmental group called out upper basin states, including Colorado, for excess water usage. Today's weather includes milder temperatures, with highs in the 30s, and tonight's overnight temps for Denver will be 29 degrees and 25 for Boulder and 26 for Fort Collins. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 29 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Unusually strong winter winds blew across a large swath of the western U.S. yesterday, including much of Colorado. Joining me to speak about the science behind the severe weather event is Andrew Winters, assistant professor at the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at the University of Colorado, Boulder. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Shannon. Good to talk to you.
Can you start off with an assessment of the aftermath of the storm that we just had yesterday?
Yeah, it was a pretty wild event. I think, you know, in many ways, a culmination of the really dry winter we had really being conducive to a lot of the blowing dust and things like that we saw along the plains. And, you know, with just the La Nina that we've had over the course of the sort of summer or the winter time so far, it's really sort of set the stage for us to be in this period where severe weather events can be a bit more likely during during La Nina winters, as some research has suggested. And so an event like yesterday definitely falls in line with that. So pretty remarkable event from start to finish, that's for sure.
You know, I keep hearing the term La Nina, but what exactly does it mean from a scientific perspective?
Yeah, so La Nina corresponds to a situation where the sea surface temperatures within the equatorial Pacific Ocean are warmer than normal across the western half of that equatorial Pacific basin. So over by, let's say, the Philippines and sort of that part of the Atlantic, Pacific Ocean. And so what that does is it can basically translate to a greater likelihood of a wavier jet stream at mid-latitudes. So instead of the jet being straighter, like it is climatologically, we end up with a jet that's wavier, kind of like when you crack a whip, sort of those types of waves you see. And when you have that wavier flow pattern, it can be more conducive to the development of really intense low pressure systems, say over the central U.S., these sort of whiplash events where you end up with warm and then cold temperatures over a relatively short span. So what we're seeing so far as far as the course of the winter has been going is very consistent with what we would expect with a La Nina winter from that perspective.
Aside from La Nina temperatures over the ocean, you also mentioned a dry winter. What does that have to do with these wind storms that we're experiencing?
Yeah, so at least, you know, La Nina can be a bit of a mixed bag for Colorado. Some years are a lot drier than normal. Some we end up with more normal precipitation. In fact, this year is the second year in a row we've had a La Nina. They've been calling it, quote unquote, a double dip La Nina because it's sort of this two-year type period we've been in one. And from that perspective, you know, last year we had a pretty wet winter. We had above average snowfall, especially later in the year. So it didn't really fit that sort of dry paradigm that we can sometimes see in a La Nina. This year's almost the exact opposite, where we basically haven't had any snowfall whatsoever, or any precipitation along the plains. And we've seen some of the drought conditions or the drought categories increase in magnitude over the last few weeks, especially across the eastern plains. So you can imagine with no crops there and basically no soil moisture to keep, you know, the dust sort of situated on the ground, even when you have windy conditions, all of that gets picked up. And we saw conditions that led to the closure of I-70 yesterday, the, you know, gusty conditions we saw across western Kansas. There's a lot of really impressive videos of folks being in almost, you know, not whiteout conditions for snow, but essentially like dust out conditions when you think about it from driving perspectives. So that kind of, you know, lack of a wet winter so far, I think, has really set the stage for, you know, some of the visibility impacts with the dust to be more substantial yesterday than they might have been otherwise.
And do the forest fires and the wildfires that have now become seasonal in this area have anything to do with these windstorms as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's probably not too much of a linkage directly between some of the increased fire activity we've seen over the last few years and let's say some of these winds that we've had, let's say here in Boulder yesterday or not. The forest fires are another sort of symptom of just the dry conditions that we've seen across a large function of the Intermountain West. And, you know, central Kansas even had one of their biggest grass fire days on record yesterday, just with the strong windstorm. So with the dry conditions, there were a number of different grass fires that developed across western Kansas. And with the strong winds, they were able to be sort of a little bit more prolific too. So, you know, an event like yesterday isn't only something where, you know, it increases fire danger across the Front Range, but also can be an impact across places farther to the east as well, given just the dry conditions we've had. Luckily, we ended up with no major fire impacts yesterday, despite the dry conditions and the winds. That was definitely a concern going in that there could be fire starts yesterday in our area.
And from a big picture perspective, how did yesterday's windstorm stack up with regards to other high wind events in this area, in this area's recorded history?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's records that the National Weather Service in Boulder put out in advance of the storm. I can't remember the specific numbers themselves, but some of the higher end windstorms we've experienced in Boulder are on the order of maybe 120 to even 130 mile an hour gusts going back in history. So we've had some really prolific windstorms. The maximum that we saw yesterday was right around 90 miles an hour or so. So it wouldn't be enough to really stretch us into record-breaking territory here along the Front Range. But locations across southeast Colorado, Lamar had a gust that exceeded 100 miles an hour yesterday. And that certainly is approaching some of the highest wind speeds they've observed. I think what's really remarkable about the event as a whole, maybe not just across our region, but across the upper Midwest, is that there were stations that were recording stronger wind gusts without thunderstorms yesterday than they have observed in the past few years with thunderstorms. You think of the thunderstorms as being the situations where you typically see the strongest winds, but some of these stations, such as Dodge City, other locations across the upper Midwest, were observing wind speeds that even the strongest thunderstorms in the past few years haven't sort of recorded, just to kind of put the extremity of the winds in a bit more context for there.
Do you have any closing thoughts or anything else that you'd like our listeners to know about this?
Yeah, I think, you know, in the context of these types of events that we're seeing, I think it's definitely important to recognize, you know, the anomalous nature of them and to recognize that you know, for these types of events to occur outside of times we're used to, from a public awareness perspective and a forecasting perspective, we kind of maybe need to change our perspective on when and we might expect certain types of events to occur. We typically never see severe weather outbreaks, you know, in the upper Midwest in Minnesota in the wintertime. They've never recorded a tornado in December until yesterday in their recorded history. And so I think there's going to have to be a huge communication challenge from us as meteorologists to the public to really understand that due to baseline changes in the climate, we need to be prepared for things to occur outside of the normal range. And I think that's, you know, part of the conversation towards preparedness, making sure that we're in a spot to be resilient against changes in our weather due to climate change and to move forward effectively.
Andrew Winters, thank you so much for joining us today on KGNU.
Thanks, Shannon, for having me.
Andrew Winters is Assistant Professor of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at the University of Colorado Boulder. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm Hanalee Myers, and I'm joined, as always, by our cannabis correspondent, Leland Rucker. Leland is the senior editor at thenewsstation.com. Leland, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Always good to be here.
So it looks like you have an end-of-the-year wrap-up for us this time, kind of looking back at what's happened over the last year as far as cannabis news and issues, both here locally and elsewhere.
Yeah, this is the last show of the year, and I always want to, at the end of the year, look at the things that I'm thankful for. And the things that I'm really thankful for when it comes to cannabis is that John Hickenlooper, against his will at that time, he was the governor at that time, he signed the legislation on December 11th, 2012, that set in motion the rules and regulations of the industry. And we're now ending our eighth year of sales here in Colorado. And that was the moment, December 11, 2012, that I first fully realized that cannabis was going to be sold in stores in a year or so. And I'm extremely grateful that it was enshrined into the Constitution of the state so that they couldn't mess around with it. Although sometimes I wonder about the title, Treat Marijuana Like Alcohol. But, you know, the state's had its ups and downs, but I think we should be proud that the people of Colorado support the notion that cannabis in and of itself isn't really the problem, but that prohibition was. Not everyone who supports legalization or decriminalization is using cannabis. That's only a certain number of people. But even those who don't are using common sense these days instead of fear to motivate their vote. And these numbers are increasing all the time. And for that, I'm eternally grateful.
And certainly the way that Colorado has chosen to address cannabis issues is not necessarily the case everywhere.
Yeah, that's the other thing to be thankful for. It could be a lot worse. Voters in South Dakota voted for recreational legalization last year, and the governor up there, Kristi Noem, funded a lawsuit that led to a court ruling that voided the recreational marijuana law approved by 53% of voters. That's a decision that was upheld by the state Supreme Court last month. Justices affirmed the measure is unconstitutional because it violated a single subject rule for ballot initiatives. And Noem has been against legalization, even though voters are for it. She released an ad ahead of last year's election urging residents to vote against the legalization initiative. It ultimately passed with about 54% of the vote. And here's the quote. The fact is, I've never met someone who got smarter from smoking pot, the governor said. There's a brilliant comment. It's not good for our kids, and it's not going to improve our communities. In this sense, Noem makes John Hickenlooper, who opposed legalization here at the beginning, look like an advocate. And after regulators approved rules for the medical marijuana program in September, Noem said now that her administration is fully on board to make certain South Dakota continues to implement the most responsible, patient-focused medical cannabis program in the country, but not a recreational one, apparently. Legislators in Montana, where voters chose recreational marijuana, they finally relented after trying to stop it in the legislature with a bunch of wording things. And we'll see what happens there. But legislators have dallied on language, Native American rights, and a bunch of other things. So we'll see what happens up there. And, of course, there's the District of Columbia, where voters overwhelmingly went for recreational marijuana in 2014, but stores have never opened, mostly because Congress won't allow funding for them because some objected. They don't want to have legalized cannabis, even though people in the district have voted for it. And nothing's been done to actually make that happen. The U.S. Congress exercises oversight over the government of the District of Columbia, and it stopped the local government from regulating cannabis sales so far. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about voting rights these days. And if you don't believe your vote can make a difference, here's a couple of examples from Colorado. And we're a month out from the election, and Wellington, a little town up by the Wyoming border, they had a ballot initiative whether to allow marijuana sales in town. It passed by one vote.
Wow, one vote?
Yeah. Initiative 2B received 1,678 yes votes and 1,677 no votes. And as a result, the town will repeal the ban on marijuana sales and create local licensing rules for medical and marijuana sales in 2022. Initiative 300, a separate local proposal that proposed a 3.5% special tax on marijuana sales in Wellington, that also passed. In Idaho Springs, results showed that a measure overhauling marijuana excise taxes won by one vote again.
Wow.
A margin that was later bumped up to two votes after all votes were counted. And in Golden, voters were involved in a really close race about marijuana sales. The town wound up voting in favor of ending a local ban on sales by fewer than 55 votes. So the lesson here is, next year, get out and vote.
Well, we certainly look forward to having you back next year for more of the Cannabis Report, looking at issues related to marijuana and hearing your feedback.
Indeed.
Happy holidays, and thank you so much. For KGNU, I'm Hanalei Myers.
It's Thursday, and John Lindorf is in the studio with me. Today he's going to be talking about holiday food hacks and things that send kitchen incidents that send kids to the ER. Good morning, John.
Great combination, isn't it? But it's a week before the holidays, and I thought I'd share some useful information and some scary information. So there's certain things that are like part of the holiday experience, you know, but that people have difficulty with, but they're actually very simple. So I'm going to take care of three of them. The first is how to peel a pomegranate. If you've ever peeled a pomegranate, you know what that can do to a white shirt or your hands or the counter, and you know, there's a lot of loss of pomegranate. So the way to peel a pomegranate is to fill a big pot with water and peel it under the water, okay? That's the first thing. Second thing is cut off both ends and then make about six cuts, but just through the red skin. Go into water, peel it, remove all the stuff around it, and then the averils, the seeds, will sink and the other stuff will float.
Ah.
And then you've got pomegranate. The second one is how to roast a chestnut. You can do it on an open fire, like an open flame or a grill or something like that, but you need a perforated pan. All you do is you take the chestnuts, fresh chestnuts, cut across in the round side of the chestnut. You can oil it if you want, and then put it on a pan. You get a little more flavor if you do it over the flame, but you can do it in the oven. Pump it up to about 425, get the chestnuts in there. But you got to leave them in there long enough to kind of brown. The third thing is how to make whipped cream. This is a great thing for kids at parties, okay? Take a mason jar, put it in the freezer. Get a pint of cream, heavy whipping cream, not table cream or half and half. You pour it in. You can add some sugar and vanilla. And then you give it to a hyperactive child.
Ooh.
And have them shake it until it turns into whipped cream.
Okay. Well, in that segue, tell me about ER trips and how to avoid them with kids in the kitchen.
I was starting to read statistics about the things that send people to the hospital. And I decided to see how many of them involve kids. I talked to the head of the ER at Children's Hospital in Colorado Springs, and he said that a lot of the problems, well, A, and it's true for adults too, knives, not sharp knives necessarily, but dull knives are very bad, and that the problem is that most either kids grab a knife off the counter or they're trying to slice things. So obviously teaching your kids how to do that. I also talked to the head of food lab in Boulder about what she sees, because she does a lot of kids classes. A couple of things she said was one of the worst things is pulling hot stuff over on top of you. So turn your handles on the stove if you have a hot liquid, turn that towards the side. And my personal recommendation about this is do not have glasses.
Goodness, we are out of time. Like, don't even have time for the best thing. I would say Boulder Weekly. Check him out on Boulder Weekly. We got to go straight to the BBC.
Bon appetit.